Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your host. I am the host of The Creative Alchemist, and we come to you every Thursday, and we talk about business. We talk about finance, law, leadership, people skills, transferable skills. We have addressed many, many different aspects of business, including coping with the coronavirus. And today is going to be rather extraordinary. As always, we have a guest. And before we introduce the guest, I never take this journey alone. I have a co-pilot, Lori. Let them know you're here.
Hi, everybody. It's Lori Miller from LGC Interior Design, and I'm here with the Creative Alchemist and my co-host, Ted. So,
Do we have a sponsor?
We do have a sponsor, the Floor Store on 904 Broad Hollow Road. If anybody wants any floors of any kind, ceramic, porcelain, wood, vinyl, carpet, rugs, you name it, he's got it, and they've been in business over 25 years. So if you want experience and knowledge, then that's the place to go.
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, so this, like Ted said, this show is all about business, and we want to bring you answers to all of your questions. So here we are, and we're going to introduce our guest. We have a very special guest tonight, and I will let Ted fill you in. And Ted, if you can please announce Jason, he's ready to start.
Okay, great. So our guest is Jason Van Camp, and Jason is a military man. And I think everyone understands to go into the military, it takes quite a bit of discipline. Basic training, and not only has he gone through basic training, he is well beyond that. He's had over 300 combat missions, and he's here to talk to us about more than combat, because not only was Jason in the Army, he went on to be an Army Ranger, and that's well beyond the discipline of just going into the regular Army, not to take away from being in the Army. And then Jason went on to be a Green Beret. So if you can imagine the kind of discipline and the skills and the mindset he had to have to make it through that kind of training, and what Jason has done, not only has he been in the Army, he's also a businessman. He has an MBA and trains people in leadership. He has a company called Mission 60. And what Jason has been able to do is transfer a lot of the discipline and the mindset that it took to become an Army Ranger and a Green Beret, and he's been able to transfer that to his clients in the corporate world. And we are going to have a conversation with Jason about leadership and mindset, accomplishment. We're even going to talk to him about his career in the military. I strongly urge you to call in and engage him in this conversation. He is a man who is trained to handle anything. So in this context of being comfortable, being uncomfortable. So as you can imagine, with the kind of training and over 300 combat tours, Jason knows what it's like to be uncomfortable. So I urge you to call. Our phone number is 516-387-1640. That's 516-387-1640. So we are going to have this really interesting and dynamic conversation. I've seen some of Jason's workshops and videos. I've had extensive conversation with him, and I'd like to introduce you to him. And we are going to, at some point, open up the line, and Lori and I are going to have a great conversation and interview him. And Jason, let them know you're here.
Hey, Ted, I'm here. I'm here. And that is one hell of an incredible introduction. I'm feeling really good about myself right now. Most of that was true, guys, for the audience members. Most of it was true. But thank you for that. It's great to be on the show.
No, thanks for accepting the invitation.
And Ted, you forgot that he's also an International Association of Top Professionals for his Mission 60 as well.
Oh.
So congratulations, Jason.
Thank you. I appreciate that, guys. You guys are crazy. You guys are crazy. But I'm just trying to help people and serve other people. That's what gets me out of bed in the morning. That's what excites me. That's what I'm passionate about.
So what made you go into the military? Where are you from originally? Where are you from?
Yeah, so I was born in Washington, D.C., and I grew up on the Virginia side near Alexandria. I'm from Springfield, Virginia. And
okay.
That's a big government military area. So growing up as a kid, you know, when we had, the day, the show and tell day, when they ask you questions like, what does your dad do? 90% of the kids in class said, I don't know what he does. He works for the military or he works for the government, and we're not allowed to talk about it or whatever. So that's kind of how I grew up.
Wow. Some common ground between you and I. I lived in D.C., in D.C. for about 14 years. 9 months I lived in Silver Spring, but the rest of it was in D.C. So I know what you're talking about.
My dad's from there.
Say that again?
My father, he's from Silver Spring.
Oh, cool. Okay. So I've heard the conversations where people really don't tell you what they do exactly, and especially the amount of defense contractors that are there. So your dad, was he in the military? So your father was in the military then, correct?
So he was in Vietnam. He got drafted in the Vietnam War, and he broke his back pretty significantly. He got injured and was sent home back to Virginia, and he eventually became a government contractor, and he worked at the AMC Army Material Command building in Alexandria, Virginia. And prior to that, he worked in that same vein at the Pentagon. And so whenever I asked my dad, I'm like, what do you do? He said, I work for the government. And I said, as a young kid, he's like, well, what does that mean? And he would say, I work with computers. And that's all he'd tell me. And I never pressed the issue. And I honestly, I don't even know right now to this day what exactly my dad did in the military.
Very interesting. Hey, Jason, your voice is a little low. I'm getting message from the audience that they can't hear very well. Is there any way
How about this? Is this better? Is this better? Hold on a sec. I'm at my house in Utah.
Far away.
Okay, how about now?
Yeah, much better.
Okay,
much
perfect.
Better. Okay,
great.
So
to this day, you still don't know. So should we assume that some of those episodes of the X-Files, your father may have been in some of those?
Oh, man, I love my dad, and he's one of my heroes. But I'll tell you what, if he knew anything about government alien involvement, he would be the guy I looked up to, my hero in the entire planet, because first off, he knows about it, and second off, he kept it a secret from me this whole time.
Very cool. So was that your inspiration to go into the military yourself?
Partly, I suppose. So growing up in that area, it was normal to join the military. It was normal to be a part of the government. That's what people did. And my grandfather, he was in the Army Air Corps, which later became the Air Force. So he retired a colonel in the Air Force, worked out of, some areas in Virginia in his last duty station as well. And my mother grew up as an Air Force brat. She traveled all over the world and spent a lot of time in Germany and different places. And so it was normal for me. And when I was in high school, it seemed like everybody had kind of made their decision their senior year pretty early on where they were going to go, and I had no idea. where I was going to go. I just wanted to play football. You know, I was really good at football. I was captain of the football team. I love football. I was a sports guy, athletic guy, and I just wasn't quite big enough. You know, I'm a little over 60 tall, 180-pound linebacker. You know what I mean? I was pretty fast, pretty strong, but I wasn't going to play in a big-time Division I program. And West Point came knocking, and I was recruited pretty hard to go there, and I eventually decided to go to West Point.
Very cool.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the elite. So you still were in the elite, and 180 at a linebacker, that's 180, that's more like a defensive back. So.
I know. If I could go back and do it all over again, I would be like a strong safety or something like that. But
right.
You know, I was a linebacker, and after, you know, when you go to West Point, you go really like a few weeks after you graduate from high school. So you don't have the privilege of an entire summer off like most kids do. And you go into something that they call Beast Barracks, which is sort of like basic training for the West Point cadets. And I lost. I didn't have much to lose. I didn't have a whole lot of body fat on me, but I still lost like 15 pounds.
Wow.
And I remember it was crazy. I remember going into two-a-days for football, you know, thinking that I was going to compete for a spot, and then, you know, getting on the scale and seeing that I weighed 178 pounds, you know, middle linebacker. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, I'm going up against running backs that are like 240 pounds. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
So you
right.
grow up pretty quick, and you get tough pretty quick, mentally and physically.
No
oh,
question.
I bet.
So that sounds like, football is playing sports and training to be competitive. That's no question. That is takes you on a path of being uncomfortable, right? So practice, and the coach says, run it again, do it again. Did you ever see that movie, the Disney movie called Miracle, about the 1980 hockey team?
Oh, sure. It's a classic, of course.
Okay. So when I say again, you know exactly what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, yeah. Again. Yeah, coach.
right. So that's, you know, when you think of being uncomfortable, no question. And I watched the they interviewed them and said that they were not acting. They really did make them do it again and again and again so that they really would be tired and not have to act. So, you know, we're talking about getting comfortable, being uncomfortable. Being an athlete is definitely a path. But when you lost your summer vacation and went straight to West Point, and, you know, they took you down Beast Alley and got you right into it, and you start dropping weight. So it sounds like you were introduced to being uncomfortable rather early in life.
Yeah, I was. You know, I'll tell you this. I had a very happy childhood, you know, and my parents gave me everything that they possibly could. And, you know, and I feel like a lot of times most kids are embarrassed by their parents when they're a teenager or whatever. And I never was. I was always really proud of my parents. I thought they were pretty cool, and they loved me a lot, you know. And I don't think I was introduced to a lot of discomfort growing up, you know. But sports kind of gave me that opportunity to feel uncomfortable, you know. Every time
right.
you get hit or you fall down, you have to pick yourself right back up again. You know, when we do conditioning drills, you see how far you can push yourself. And so
right.
for me, like, you know, sports was a great aperture for me to learn how to deal with pain, how to get uncomfortable, how to become comfortable with it, and how to grow. And then when I went to West Point, I mean, that was the first time where I really faced adversity, because, you know, they're cadets and instructors in your face when you're a freshman, yelling at you all the time, making you go, you know, from here to there. You're running, you know, you have all these rules you have to follow. And on top of that, you know, you've got to go to football practice, and, you know, you're a freshman trying to learn the ropes, and it's just like you're in over your head and you're just trying to tread water. At least I was, you know, at that point, a million things going on. And you, at least I did, you start gaining like mental and physical toughness points. You know, you start really pushing your bar down, your limit, as far as what you can take and how much you can put up with and so forth. And to each his own, I guess. For some people, it's an amazing experience, and they come out of West Point saying, that was the best 4 years of my life. I don't understand those people. I love West Point saying, those were the worst 4 years of my life. You know what I mean? It was terrible. But I became stronger because
no pain, no gain, right?
Exactly. And it was so difficult for me that when I went to Ranger School, you know, a few years after, really just a year after West Point, it's 3 months at a minimum of living basically in the woods, you know, and I lost 28 pounds at Ranger School. And
wow.
You don't get any sleep,
wow.
You don't get
wow.
Meat. You're just getting your soul crushed every day. But I remember being there thinking, yeah, this is tough, but at least I'm not at West Point. I mean, I legitimately thought that.
Are you serious?
Yeah, because West Point was just a tough experience for me. And like I said, to each his own. What's easy for someone is impossible or very difficult for someone else, and vice versa.
Right.
Right. So that was – Ranger School was awesome. Special Forces Selection and Qualification course was awesome. I loved it. West Point, not so much for me.
Really?
Right.
No kidding. What do you think was the difference, the big deciding factor?
You know, I kind of feel like at West Point, it kind of felt like this to me at times. You know, if you're driving down the highway in your car, you know, and yeah, you might be going a little bit over the speed limit, you know, 5-10 miles, maybe, you know, something like that. And, you know, maybe it's an accident. Maybe it's just how you drive normally. And you know, you look behind you and you see a cop and they might pull you over. And, you know, you got to accept that because you were breaking the law.
Right.
But imagine if you're driving down the road, you know, and you're going over the speed limit a little bit. I mean, you're not, you know, being negligent or anything like that. And everybody around you, all the cars around you, all the civilians around you, they're trying to pull you over as well for going over the speed limit. You know, it just felt like there was no escape. Like everybody was out to get you, you know, and unfortunately that's kind of what it was like at the time at West Point. There was a lot of, you know, us versus them mentality with the football team guys. And it was just a different experience.
So sounds like somewhat of a culture change for you, like going from a family where you really looked up to your dad and your mother really understood the military. Sounds like there was a lot of understanding. And then you go to this place where it's every man for himself. And we're competing. You know, not only are we every man for ourselves, we're going to jump on you. You know, we're going to gang rush you or something. Is that, am I on the right path?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I guess for me, it was like this. When my parents told me to do something, I did it. They didn't have to remind me twice. They didn't have to force anything down my throat. They did it. I did it because I loved and I respected them. And that's just how I operated. But when I went to West Point, you know, it was like they were, instead of telling me what to do and expecting me to do it, they were forcing me to do it. They were in my face.
They were
it was just, you know, it was just kind of like, hey man, I got this, you know, get out of my face, leave me alone. I can take care of this. And that experience was quite the opposite when I went to the Special Forces, because they didn't get in your face. They didn't do that. They just told you a task and they expected you to do it above standard. And that's why the Special Forces kind of mindset really resonated with me in the military, because that's how I grew up. And I loved every second of my Special Forces experience.
And I would assume in the Green Beret, that was even more intense. And not the in your face, but the training for that, correct?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you had to be in the best shape of your life. And I was. And the difference is, you know, in the regular military, you know, you do a lot, you hear a lot of yelling and getting information and motivating, and everybody's together. In the Special Forces, it was different. Like during our selection process, where they decide if you're good enough to even try out to enter the qualification course, all they did was, it was so interesting. They had barracks set up and they had a big whiteboard set up in between the barracks where we stayed, right? And one of the instructors at his leisure would go out to the whiteboard and just write down, you know, the five W's, you know, this is who I need. This is what you know, this is where you guys are going to be. This is what equipment you need to break, you need to bring. And so they don't tell you, you have to go out and check the whiteboard like every 5 minutes because you never know when they want you to be somewhere.
Oh,
and
wow.
So you show up somewhere and you show up in your, you know, your PT, your physical training gear, your, you know, your tennis shoes and your gray t-shirt and black shorts or whatever. And you expect like, okay, well, I guess I'm going for a run. You know, and we're out in the woods on these trails and they just, you show up and the instructor's there with a stopwatch and he just says, okay, everything you do is graded. You're going to be timed. Ready? Go. And you just start running. And you're like, well, where are we running to? How far are we running? You have no idea. And so you just run. And sometimes the runs were 4 miles, sometimes 8 miles, sometimes 12 miles. And, you know, you got back and you finished and they just recorded your time and just went back to the barracks. They didn't tell you good job or you did horrible or then nothing. And I love that.
That's interesting. So that, you know, training and not knowing where the finish line is, that's a different mindset because we're, and you're saying a couple of things, right? So there were no trophies, no rewards, no reinforcement. You were managed by objectives and didn't always know the end goal, what you knew you had to run, right? So, but
correct.
I think the sort of mind-boggling part is to not know where the finish line is. So you don't even know how to pace yourself.
Exactly. So you don't even know, you know, you're just going all out as hard as you can, as fast as you can. That's it. That's all you know. And I love that. I loved it.
Wow. So I want to ask you, so let's now transition to you as a professional. So that's sort of your background, right? In a snapshot, you went off to get an MBA. Just could you tell me, like in 60 seconds, what made you do that?
Oh yeah, no problem. So, I kind of finished my team time, which meant that when I was a captain running an ODA as a commander, an operational detachment alpha, you know, in combat on several combat tours in the Middle East, you know, you get promoted to major at some point. And I was afforded the opportunity to be the group assistant operations officer, which is a sort of a SOT officer position. And then, you know, after that first year as a major, they basically, your chain of command says, hey, listen, we can't rate you as a young major with all these older majors because it's not fair to you. So we're going to let you go, you know, teach at one of the academies or go work in an embassy or go pursue a master's degree well for the next 2 years. And then when you're done, you're going to come back into the Army and continue your career, bringing the knowledge and the breadth of wisdom and everything you learned from your experiences back to the community, which is a great thing. And so I chose to go get my MBA, and I applied to go to a few schools, and Brigham Young University accepted me. And it was a top 15 school at the time for MBA, and I had really never spent any time whatsoever in Utah. And so I came out here and had a phenomenal time and really enjoyed my time. It was a great program. The instructors were fantastic. And I caught the entrepreneurial bug. You know, I wanted to start a business, and I did.
But could you tell us a little bit about Mission 60 and how maybe an entrepreneur I can't even say the word, right? Entrepreneur could benefit and how, you know, what that training is like?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So my mother always used to tell me, show me your friends and I'll show you your future. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you have five friends that are millionaires, you're going to be the sixth, right? And I looked around at my friends that had gotten out of the military, and most of them, if not all of them, had gone down the entrepreneurial road and started their own businesses. And one of them had already sold one business for $20 million. And another guy was starting a government contracting business, and he was, you know, raking in $10 million in revenue. And another guy was you know, doing a logistics business. And I was really proud of my friends and, you know, and they were kind of blazing the trail for me in a way.
Right.
And so I looked at them and, you know, when people are your friends, you kind of see their good points and their bad points. And I thought to myself, well, you know, if they can do it, so can I. I mean, there's no difference mm-hmm. between them and me, right? Like, we're all
right.
on the same kind of level or the same level. And so I said to myself, if I'm going to start a business, what should I do? And I thought, what am I knowledgeable about and what am I passionate about? And I was very knowledgeable about leadership and team building. I'd spent the past, you know, almost 20 years in the military and as a Ranger and a Green Beret and, you know, Special Forces and going to combat and being at West Point and all that. And I was really passionate about people and people that I met along my journey. Some of my former commanders and peers and my subordinates, guys I really looked up to and I thought were the best leaders I ever met in my life. And I thought I'd want my kids to just be in a room with these people and soak up everything that they are so they could be stronger, better, you know, smarter people capable of making
right.
decisions and right decisions in the moment. And so I got together with them and I said, hey guys, I've got this idea. I want to create a leadership development company. Are you in? And most of them said, yes, we want to be a part of this, Jason. And I was very honored and lucky and blessed that they would say that. And shortly thereafter, we started cold calling NFL teams, you know, out of the blue. And we got an opportunity with one of them.
Wow. That's pretty,
very
yeah.
cool.
I mean, that alone is obstacles, right? It's overcoming because they're like the hardest to get a hold of.
Oh, there's no question. Their motto is no, right? At the NFL
right.
level.
Exactly.
And we just got an opportunity to present to them, and we knocked out of the park. And after the presentation was over, the head coach, you know, Rex Ryan, he's like, "Congratulations, Jason! You guys just won a contract with the New York Jets for the entire year." And so we worked with them for the entire year, and it was for the entire season. It was awesome. They had a great year that year. And we learned a lot. We did some amazing events up at Woody Johnson's farm, you know, the owner of Johnson & Johnson and the Jets. And you know, we met a lot of interesting players and coaches of the New York Jets organization. And it was our first contract. We got on the first front page of ESPN.com. You know, they did a big article on us and everything. And, you know, I was still active duty military, just getting my MBA at BYU, you know, and it was just fun. It was just a cool experience.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Good for you.
Yeah, congratulations on that. Great job, for sure.
You guys are too kind.
So now what do you actually, like, what would your presentation look like if you were giving it to an entrepreneur? What do you, you know, what do you do? How do you get them to overcome their, you know, what hiccups or setbacks or obstacles or, you know, whatever goes through their head?
Yeah, no, it's different for everybody. And so the best answer I can mm-hmm. give you is it depends, right? Because what works for one person isn't going to work for another person. And the one-size-fits-all model, the hack, the secret, that doesn't exist, right? It just
mm-hmm.
doesn't. And so for us, we really try to get to know the person, the individual, and then try to create a unique custom program for them to help them overcome whatever challenge they're facing. So I wrote a book, as you guys know, called Deliver Discomfort, and the subtitle is How U.S. Special Operations Forces Overcome Fear and Dare to Win by Getting Comfortable Being Uncomfortable. And it was published in February of this year. It's an Amazon number one bestseller. We're trying to
wow.
make it a New York Times bestseller right now. We've sold almost 20,000 copies so far. Very, very proud of it. Very excited about it. The reviews are through the roof. And we're giving the book away for free for anybody that wants it. If you just go to deliberatediscomfort.com and you can sign up for the book and you just have to pay for shipping and we'll send it to you. And you know, we'd love for people to take advantage of that because there's so much value in the book. There's so much value in understanding, you know, that when you make the courageous decision, deliberately, voluntarily, intentionally choose discomfort, you know, you proved yourself that you're no longer satisfied with the way that things are in your life, and you're ready to change. You're not going to tolerate it any longer, right? And when you won't tolerate it any longer, you're ready for growth. You want to accept and embrace the suffering because ultimately you want a better life for yourself and for your family and for your business. And we're really changing lives. We're helping people develop that deliberate discomfort mindset. And I know it's true. I know it works because I live it. I mean, I read my book every day. And I take those lessons that we talk about, and I try to apply them to my own life, because everybody has something that's uncomfortable for them, that's difficult for them, that they fear doing. For me, you know, earlier this year, I was afraid of, you know, posting on social media. You know, FOPO, you've heard of FOMO, fear of missing out. I had FOPO, fear of posting online, you know. And I started doing it. And I just swallowed my pride, and I said, you know what, I'm gonna get some haters, but I'm just going to put myself out there, and I'm doing it for the business, and I'm doing it for the people on my team, because we need better marketing. We need to get our message out there. We need to do this. And it's just one example for me of facing fear, facing things I don't want to do. I really don't want to do, because ultimately I think about it like this. Some people will tell you, you know, wake up at 4 a.m. and go to the gym. Okay, well, if that's difficult for you, go do that. For me, it's not that hard. You know, and I'm not bragging about that. I'm just saying it's become a habit because I've been in the military so long, right? West Point, you know, Army Ranger, Green Beret. Like, we woke up early and we worked out. Oftentimes, we woke up at 4 a.m. It's not that hard for me to get up that early. Other people would tell you, you know, take a cold shower in the morning. Okay, if that's uncomfortable for you, do it. I lived in Russia for 2 years. In April, they turn off the hot water, and they turn it back on again in October. So you're mandatory.
Wow.
Taking showers, cold showers, mandatory cold showers, you know, the entire late spring, summer, early fall. I got used to it. Other people would tell you, make your bed in the morning. Again, if that's hard for you, do it. If it's not, do something else that is hard for you, because it's not hard for me. I lived that West Point life for 4 years where we had to make hospital corners on our bed, right? Every morning, it's a habit for me to make my bed. It's not hard for me. So that's what deliberate discomfort is all about, is finding out what's hard for you and then doing that.
Are those
so
the pillars?
You said the book is, they can get it for free?
Yeah, you can get the book for free
at
deliberatediscomfort.com. Oh, no, you just go to the website, deliberatediscomfort.com, and if you go
okay.
to that website, you'll see a form that you can fill out. You know, it's just a simple standard form, you know, and it asks you, where do you want us to ship the book? And you pay
okay.
for shipping and handling, and you get it in like 5 days or so.
Very cool. Okay, go to deliberatediscomfort.com. Perfect.
Yeah, so you guys take advantage of that, please. Please, because I want to get that book in your hands. I want you guys to digest that book, read that book, because, it's, like I said before, it's really impacting people. It's changing lives. It's helping people take that uncomfortable leap of faith and embrace deliberate discomfort. And we want more people to join our tribe. You know, our tribe is strong, the Mission 6-0 tribe. And I'm proud of the people on our team and the tribesmen that we have.
Very cool.
Very cool.
Thank you. Appreciate that, guys.
Yeah. Now, if anybody's
yeah.
looking to, I just put it on my Facebook page so you'll know where to go. And that's LGC Interiors.
So.
Very good. Go ahead, Ted.
So
take it away.
You were, you know, you grew up as a military guy. You go into the military, and then you get a formal business education and get the entrepreneurial bug, and now here you are. So I've looked at some of your videos, and I've seen you in a room, like a classroom setting, but you also take people outdoors and have them do challenging tasks. Is that correct?
We do. We do. It's all about creating a custom program for your specific organization. And that's what we do. So first thing we do is sit down and we listen to you and you tell us your unique challenges. And then we provide unique solutions for that. So COVID's been difficult for us because prior to COVID, everything we did was in person. We do keynote presentations and we do workshops and,
right.
and like I said, these custom programs, sometimes corporate retreats or team building activities or what have you. Because COVID's forced us to pivot and change and do things differently and adapt, you know, we do virtual keynotes now, and we've done quite a few of those. They've been fantastic. Really enjoy those. Learning how to get better at those and really delivering a powerful message. All of my guys are, you know, based on what the client wants. And we also have our book, Deliberate Discomfort. It's also a hardcover, ebook, and audiobook. So whatever you guys want, we can deliver that. And we have a masterclass. So an online masterclass that you can take. It's 66 videos. We're accredited. So you can get certified and accredited. And, you know, each video is about 15 minutes in length. And we take all the curriculum and training that we have in Deliberate Discomfort, and we put it out into a video kind of platform. And each of the individuals associated with Deliberate Discomfort, my veterans and my scientists, they're all a part of the book, all part of the masterclass. And that's what we do now. So as far as classroom stuff, you know, we've previously done a lot of workshops. And then as far as the outdoor stuff, I mean, sometimes we've created events for our clients where we've brought out tanks and helicopters and flamethrowers and all sorts of weapons. And
are you serious?
Oh, yeah. We do a full mission profile with the guys.
Wow.
And, you know, they do a hostage rescue mission and, you know, just make it as real as we possibly can and really add value. And the value in all that is not only is it fun and guys are, you know, building chemistry and relationships and camaraderie and everything like that, but it really gets people emotional and they open up. And when they open up and expose their hearts, they communicate a lot more. And really that's the challenge that we face when we work with organizations. It's essentially a lack of communication at some point down the line. They're having a hard time getting people to buy in or, you know, meeting their deadlines or what have you. And it's a result of leadership. And really that's the difference between winning and losing. It's your ability to lead.
So you and I talked about you were training a football team, and I think you said one of the players had never spoken to one of his teammates. Was that the story you were telling me?
Yeah, that's exactly
what. That's an example of like a total lack of communication, and you're on the same team.
It's kind of bizarre. Really, it's kind of what it came down to because, you know, when we were working with the New York Jets, fantastic organization, players were fantastic. One of our first events, after it was over, it was a really emotionally exhausting event, physically exhausting event. I went over to one of the linemen, his name's Matt Slauson, and I said, "Hey, Matt, what did you think of the event? How did it go for you? What did you learn?" You know, and he said, "You know what? I learned a lot, but there was one lesson for me that really stuck out." And I was like, what was that? Tell me. I'm fascinated. You got to tell me, you know? And he pointed across the road. It was a little dirt road there, and everyone was kind of catching their breath, drinking water, kind of walking around. And he said, "You see that guy right there?" And I looked over, and I said, "Yeah, that's Jeff Cumberland." And Jeff was a backup tight end for the Jets at the time. And I was like, yeah. Jeff and I have been on the same team for 4 years now. I said, "Okay." And he said, "You know, the first time I've ever said a word to him was 5 minutes ago."
Wow.
And I was like, wow. So you guys are on the same team for 4 years. You're a left guard. He's a tight end. You virtually play right next to each other. You've been on the same team for 4 years. You know, and you haven't said a word to this guy. And I just left the meeting earlier today in an auditorium with the head coach and all the players where you guys were talking about how your family and your brotherhood and you fight for the man to your left and to your right. I said, how are you going to fight for the man to your left and to your right if you don't even know who that person is? Like, how
exactly.
are you going to care about that person? Like,
right.
how do you even, like, imagine? And so we talked to Matt and Jeff, and we got them talking, and they became friendly, and they became friends, you know, and as a result, you know, Jeff felt more comfortable in the organization. He felt like he was wanted, you know, he felt like he could do more and he could be more and he gained confidence. And that year, like, he scored like 5 times as many touchdowns as he did in the previous
no
4 years.
No kidding.
And he had a career year. And Matt Slauson, years later, you know, I'm talking with him. He's retired now. And he's like, you know, Jay, he's like, I was a stud, you know, when I was a young guy. But as I got older, my play diminished, you know, as it always does when you get older. And teams were still bringing me in. You know, I played for the Chargers and for the Bears and, you know, or the Colts or whatever. And he's like, I probably, if you just rated me on my skill level, I didn't belong in the league. But people were bringing me in because of my leadership ability, because of the presence that I had, because of what I brought to the locker room. And he said, I got to be honest with you, man. I attributed that to you and your team and the lessons you guys taught me over the course of that season, because I became a leader and I learned how to lead, and it really helped those organizations win.
Wow. That's a great story. So, you know, you talk about, you know, warriors. I mean, you look at the military and you look at football. I mean, football is essentially a simulated battle, right? It's a battlefield. And so you could say they're warriors, right? And you have a program, Warrior Rising. Are you talking about some of those pillars? You have 4 pillars. Are these some of the pillars you're referring to now, or is that something different?
No, so that's my nonprofit organization. It's called Warrior Rising. And at that organization, we help veterans and their immediate family members in the most altruistic way we know how. It's helping them help themselves. And we do that through business ownership. So we help veterans and their immediate family members start or accelerate their own businesses. You know, and the 4 pillars we have at Warrior Rising, we give them education. So we give them access to an online training platform called the Warrior Academy. It translates the military operations order into a business model. Highly reviewed, you know, very influential and beneficial for anyone that wants to start a business the right way. Check all their boxes and make sure that all their bases are covered. The second pillar is mentorship. And so we have mentors in our organization where we link up the veterans and the mentors together one-on-one to create a go-to-market strategy. Our third step is, you know, financial assistance. So we provide grants or opportunities for loans or investments. And then the fourth and final pillar is community. And so it's not just finding a purpose again for veterans. It's also finding a tribe, a family, a community. And so we provide that at Warrior Rising as well. So those are our 4 pillars.
Wow, really good. So would you consider that to be an aspect of philanthropy for you, or how do you classify that?
Oh, for sure. It's definitely philanthropic. It's a 501c3, so it's a nonprofit. And, it isn't intended to make us rich. It's intended to help veterans, and it's soul enriching. You know, it's just amazing to be able to help veterans and see them help themselves, really. It's not about giving them a handout. It's about giving them all the tools they need to pick themselves up and win. And, we tell them your success is or failure is your own. You know, you don't say that Warrior Rising did this for you, and you don't blame Warrior Rising if you don't succeed. You're the one who succeeds or fails. We just provided you the tools to succeed.
Right. Interesting. Very interesting. I just want to ask, are your parents, they're still alive?
My mother passed away when I was younger. And my father, he's still alive. He fought a number of illnesses. But my father's still alive, and I have a younger brother and a younger sister, and they both still live in Virginia.
Okay. Your father must be quite proud of you. I mean, you've taken a a military career and a quite intense one, and you transition that over into business, and many of the skills that you acquired in the military are now transferable. I mean, and part of the reason I'm bringing this up is, you know, Lori and I have done a show on how do you transfer your skills, and especially in this kind of global pandemic. You know, that may be key for people, understanding transferable skills, and you are a walking, breathing example of that, and you've done a great job with it. Do you have any advice or insight or perspectives on how people can do what you've done, and which is just transferable skills, and be successful with it?
You know, if you're a veteran that wants to start a business, come to Warrior Rising and we can have an intimate conversation about how to do that. You know, other than that, I would just tell folks a few things. One, you know, figure out what you want to do in life. Figure out what you think about when you don't have to think, and then I'll tell you who you are. And you should pursue that. And once you start pursuing it, it's going to be hard. You know, and just like anything in life, if it's not hard, it's not worth it, right? So you got to choose hard things, or hard things are going to choose you. So the easiest thing I can tell you is keep putting one foot in front of the other. No matter how many times you fall down, get yourself back up. And as quickly as you get yourself back up, that's as quickly as you're going to find success. So keep doing that. Keep moving forward. Keep pushing the issue. And if you never quit, you'll never fail. And that's what I believe, and that's how I live my life. You know, and that's a simple way to, I guess, describe that. But, you know, as far as developing a plan, it's very hard to do this by yourself on your own. You need to have a team around you. You need to have people that are bought into your vision, or you need to buy into somebody else's vision. I tell you that business ownership isn't for everybody. Some people just should get a job. And you got to be honest with yourself about that, about what you want to do, what you can do. And I guess I'll leave you with that.
So, I mean, is this, when you were talking about if you fall and you get up and persevere, I mean, that's, do you develop, like, what can you tell us about how you develop people to be comfortable with uncomfortable? Because essentially that's what you just described, right? So you're transferring skills. In the beginning, it's not easy. And if you're doing it on your own, it may be even more difficult, right? A team makes it easier. So what's the mindset? And if you are the leader of that team coming together, you know, that may be even more discomfort, you know, people looking to you for certain answers. So how do people just step into that? And it's like you're intentionally stepping into this area where you know it's going to be uncomfortable, and you've got to, like, make it home, essentially. You've got to make this uncomfortable home for you. So how do people prepare for that?
So it's tough to prepare for that discomfort, because it's supposed to be uncomfortable. If it wasn't, you're not doing it right. You know what I mean? but the same thing I tell people when they say, you know, life is easy or whatever. And I tell them, hey, well, if life is easy for you, you're not living life the right way. Right? Because you should live your life in a way that you're growing, improving, becoming stronger. And the only way you can do that is by doing hard things. That's it.
Very true.
That's the only way. That's the truth. That's just absolute truth. And the more experience you have, you know, it's a result of failure. It's a result of pushing yourself through hard things and learning and failing and picking yourself back up and growing and trying it again and succeeding. So I tell people, listen, there's a few things you have to do. One, you just got to start. You know, you're in bed in the morning and you know you got to get up and get to work or go work out, and it's early in the morning and you're lying in bed, and all you have to do is get your butt out of that bed and put 2 feet on the floor. That's starting. And it's always the most uncomfortable thing. You know, all you have to do sometimes is show up. And the battle is fun when you just show up. And I would encourage people to make that decision on their own rather than have someone make that decision for them. Because whenever you start something, it sucks. You start a diet, it sucks. You start working out, it sucks. But once you start, you know, you're going to want to quit immediately. Right away, you're like, I don't want to do this. And then the second thing is, you got to tell yourself, don't quit. you're not seeing results, it's difficult, you want to quit, it's okay, that's normal. Some people are going to start thinking of a way out where they can quit and save face. Just don't do it. Don't give yourself an out. Don't give yourself any options. Either you succeed or you fail. No excuses. You know, sometimes you can ask yourself, why am I doing this? And I just tell them, you better have an answer. You know, what is it that's driving you? Is it a challenge? Is it something you have to prove to yourself? Is it pride? Whatever the answer is, it's got to be powerful. Like Simon Sinek says, what's your why? You know, so start, don't quit. And then the third thing is, you know, push yourself past your comfort zone. You know, at some point you're going to say to yourself, I've never done this before. I don't know what I'm doing. Hey, guess what? We've all been there. You know what I mean? Like, here's a trick. Don't say it out loud. Just pretend that you know what you're doing. You know, it's scary, but I promise you this. You know, when it's over, you're going to say this. And you've said it a million times yourself, I'm sure. It wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. And I tell folks that fear kills more dreams than failure ever will. So you got your start. You got your don't quit. Now your third is pushing past your comfort zone. And the fourth is you're past your comfort zone. It sucks. Embrace it. Right?
Situation
bad. Deal with it. And don't just deal with it. Open your arms and welcome it as you would an old friend. Right? Just when things couldn't get any worse, he shows up. Well, the suck is here to make you tougher. He's a friend, right? He's not an enemy. He's here to make you better. So instead of complaining about it, celebrate the blessing that is the suck. And if you're doing it by yourself, laugh to yourself. This is ridiculous. If you're doing it with a group, well, you've just made best friends for life, because embracing the suck in a group is a powerful bonding experience.
No and question.
My fifth point is, you know, like my next point is create a support network. So be around people, create your team, talk about your experiences, because the worse the experience it is for you, the better the story it will be for everyone else.
So
people don't want to hear about all your successes. They want to hear about all your failures so they can feel better about themselves. So they know that they're not alone, so they can feel that vulnerability, so they can open up, right? We want to live a life of authenticity, not of, you know, like pretending to be somebody you're not, right? And
right,
when you
right,
tell these stories, just be a good storyteller. That's all I'll tell you. So if you're doing all this, then you're going to get to a point where you're going to want to take a breath and look behind you and recognize your improvements and revel in it. Because you're a changed person. You know it because you see it. And you can even go back and build your confidence by doing what was uncomfortable for you before, doing it again, and seeing how easy it is for you the second time. And then ultimately, you're going to find yourself saying, you know what? I wish it would suck more. Because it's only our human nature to want to know what we're going to be able to overcome. And then the last thing I'll tell people is, you know, I lived in Russia for a few years. And they had a great saying there. It was "Повторение матутенье," which means repetition is the mother of all learning. And so the more you perform the same activity, the more confident you become. And confident behaviors are tangible. They come from practice and repetition, and then it just becomes a habit for you. So that's a long-winded answer to your question.
Very good answer. You know, it reminds me when I was nine, we used to go to this park that had a huge swimming pool, and they had two diving boards, a regular low one and a very high, the high dive. And the first dive, man, that was, just climbing up the ladder and walking out there and just jumping off. But it's kind of what you're saying. I took the first leap, and then I did it again and again and again, and then I tried doing different things. So if you don't take that first step, even if it's scary, you don't know what you're doing, you've got to start somewhere, right?
Exactly.
Very true.
Are you familiar, Jason, are you familiar with a book by Malcolm Gladwell called Outliers?
Of course, yeah. It's kind of funny because one of my friends, he wrote my bio on my website, right? I'm not going to write it myself. And he said something in the first line. He said something like, Jason is what Malcolm Gladwell would call an outlier. So I'm not sure if I am or not, but I leave it in there because it's sort of interesting.
Okay. So you know, you may know where I'm going with this. So, you know, you were saying keep doing it even if you're not good. And Gladwell says that when you get 10,000 hours of practice, you've mastered your craft, right? So you figure you'll be good at it before you get to 10,000 hours. But he just talked about mastery, you know, being more than good. When you become with 10,000 hours, you become one of those outliers who's better than the majority of the people. So you have to take that first step. You have to do that first hour before you get to 10,000. And the first hour, you're like you're saying, you're probably not good at it.
That's absolutely correct. I remember reading about that as well. So we're definitely on the same page with that, my friend.
Cool. So we're almost out of time, Jason. Can you give people, how can they get a hold of you? How do they contact you and your programs? And that's whether it's the Warrior Rising, right, your philanthropy, or your Mission 60. How do people get a hold of you?
So you guys can reach me through mission60.com. You can spell it any way you like. Most people just spell it out, MISSION SIXZERO. And you can find all about what we do there at Mission 60. And you can read about my bio and contact me and everybody else on my team as well, including Flo Groberg, who's a Medal of Honor recipient, Leroy Petrie, Medal of Honor guy, and Nate Boyer, my co-founder at Mission 60, and many of the scientists that we have on the team as well. If you want to learn more about Warrior Rising and how to support veterans, or if you're a veteran and you want to start a business, then go to warriorrising.com and learn about us, apply online. Within 48 hours of you applying, you're going to get an intake call from one of our specialists, and they're going to talk to you intimately about your business idea and you know, for about 30 minutes or to an hour or so, try to figure out if starting a business is a good idea, to vet your business plan, and if it looks good, we'll bring you into our program and we'll go from there. Now, if you want a free copy of Deliberate Discomfort, just go to deliberatediscomfort.com and watch the videos, sign up, and join our tribe, and we'll send you some newsletters and some information and get you going in that regard. And if you want to learn, just kind of follow Jason Van Camp and follow Mission 60. I typically spend my time on LinkedIn. So you can just look for Jason Van Camp on LinkedIn and you can watch my videos and my posts and everything. And post every day, more or less almost every day on LinkedIn. And then I also have a Facebook page, Jason Van Camp Facebook page that I just launched. And we can go from there.
All right, perfect. So can you give us your last words of wisdom in about 30 seconds?
Stay in the fight, no matter how hard it is. Keep pushing. Pick yourself up no matter how many times you fall down. Choose hard things, or hard things are going to choose you. And if you're thinking that if it ain't broke, don't fix it, don't think like that. Think like if it ain't broke, break it and make it better.
Break it. Break it down on purpose, huh? That sounds like a professional troublemaker, people who intentionally create problems, huh?
No, not necessarily. It's more like somebody who sees that there is always a way that we can improve. Always. And we should always be innovating. We should always be improving. We should always be striving to be better than we are now.
Okay. Very good. Lori. Any last thoughts?
Good. Jason, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
This
it's been an absolute honor.
Yeah, this is,
thanks for having me.
Yeah, this has been amazing. Thank you, Ted. And I guess we'll see everyone next week, Thursday night at 7 o'clock.
Hey, great job, Jason. I loved your story and very insightful. I'd say people, our listeners, have gotten quite a bit out of you. So, thanks for being our guest today. Thank you for all the listeners. And
Jason, a
pleasure to meet you, Jason, again and have this conversation. So thank you.
Well, thank you for inspiring me.
You guys inspire me. Seriously, thank you so much. I this was awesome, guys. Thank you for having me on the show. It's my honor, seriously.
Awesome. Have a great night.
You guys too. Take care.
All right.
All right.
Have a good evening.
Bye. Good night, everyone.
All right. Bye.
Bye.